Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Well, tonight is returning to a devotional life. We're doing session two, and I've entitled session two, The One Thing Lifestyle. And what we're going to be talking about tonight is really something closely connected to the mandate of this church, something closely in the heart of the Lord, I believe, for why he started Forerunner Fellowship, what redemptive purpose and redemptive gift that this church has to offer and to be. And, you know, in times past, we've done series on marriage and on our workplace assignments and on the fruit of the Spirit and on kingdom life and serving in various aspects of the kingdom. And in this series, while the three sessions are focused on a life of devotion, at least tonight's portion of that really connects to who we are as a congregation and what it is that the Lord has spoken and given to us, not mostly as an assignment, mostly as a gift, mostly as an invitation. And so what we're going to look at tonight is we're going to look at a verse that probably many of us know, and we're going to break it down and see what it is that the invitation of the Lord might be to us in that verse. And it's a verse that David wrote. And I want to just take a little side note for a second and just talk about King David for a second, because the subject matter that we've got in this three-part series is on a devotional life. And I can think of no one in the Bible who is a better example to study their life regarding their devotional life to get an idea of what it is that the Lord's after, what he loves, strategies of how to do it, postures of the heart to care. I cannot think of any biblical character who is better to look at in trying to discuss the subject of a devotional life than King David. And you go, well, wait, what? Normally we think of King David as king or warrior or, you know, prophet, psalmist, those kinds of things. We have more insight into King David's intimate relationship with God than we do pretty much anybody. There is so much information. I mean, there's more written about him than most people in the Bible, spare maybe Moses. I mean, David has got entire books written about him, and then he himself penned half or more of the Psalms. And so you've got not just the life of David recorded in 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel and a little bit in Chronicles and a little bit in Kings. You've not only got this record of his life, you then also have this, like, his prayer journal that you get to peer into in the book of Psalms and see the life of David coming alive. You see what he thought about and what he struggled with and what his heart's passion was and how he dealt with sin. And, I mean, this is the man. I cannot think of anybody that we have I mean, he was called a man after God's own heart. I mean, if you want to talk about studying a person to identify details about a devotional life and how do we go deep in a relationship devotionally with the Lord, David is the man. But then there's nobody who we have this much information about what his devotional life actually looked like. Nobody. And so King David gives us this, I mean, window into the heart of God and into what it means to live a life of devotion before the Lord. And so I'm thankful for this record that we have in the Bible. And I can't think of anybody who's got more insight that we have recorded anyway, more insights about Jesus or about the Lord, about how to interact with God. We're going to look at some of the revelations that he had about God that were unique and profound. But before we do that, I want to talk about David's life focus. It's not just the quantity of information that we have about David that makes him the primary or premier, I'll say premier, person study, character study on a devotional life. It's also where David aimed his life focus, how his relationship with God looked on a day-to-day basis. It's not just the quantity of the content, but the quality of the relationship that David had. And look at Psalm 27, verse 4. our focus verse for tonight. Psalm 27:4 out of the New King James. This is David pouring out his heart to God and giving us a window into his devotional life, allowing us to see his relationship with God. And he's being very raw here. This is I would have loved to have heard David sing this psalm. What his voice inflection was like at certain parts of this verse as he's singing these words. Because Psalm 27:4 was part of a psalm that David sung. One thing I have desired of the Lord, that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. Now, David lived this out as a lifestyle. We'll break that down kind of phrase by phrase here in a few minutes. But it's interesting because when you look at the life of David and you read the Psalms and you kind of peer into the measure of revelation that he had, you see that David had some powerful revelations about the nature of God, about God's temperament, about how God responded to sinners, about how God responded to repentance, about just God's responsiveness in heart. David had a supercharged devotional life. It was powerful, the things that he had. I just throw out a few of these specific revelations that are noteworthy. Each one of them would be a great study. If you're kind of hungry for this, if this is I'm catching you at a good season in your life right now where you're like, I do want to go deeper devotionally, go look at the life of David and even his Psalms and do some research on the following topics. David had profound understanding about God's beauty. A subject matter not talked about a whole lot. Certainly not talked a lot about in his time. David had a revelation of God that didn't just have God as powerful and on a throne, had him as beautiful. Had him as the epitome of beauty. The center of all of the universe's beauty and glory and radiance from that man. And David had profound understanding about God as beautiful. I mean, that's good language if you want to go deeper devotionally with Christ. Next, David had profound understanding of God's love. Not just God as righteous and as judge, but as a God that's a father that's loving and intimate and interacts with us and listens to us. You ever been in one of those conversations where maybe the person is somebody you really, really like, you think they're awesome. Maybe they're a hero of yours or whatever, and you're in the conversation, and you can tell they are totally not listening to you. I mean, they're just talking, and then as soon as you start talking, they're kind of waiting for their time to talk again. You know, they're just kind of interjecting. They're totally not there. They are not there with you at all. And you just kind of feel like on the sidelines, you know, like so not important, even though you want to really be able to engage in this. David had a revelation of God's love and tenderness and interaction, God's willingness to listen and willingness to respond. God's love of love relationship between two people, God and a person. And David had profound understanding of this. That's sweet details for devotional life study. That's some good stuff. Next, of his mercy. Oh my gosh. You look at the sins of David and they are like really big. It's like, gosh, you made some seriously bad mistakes. Like, don't go up on the roof. You're going to see the naked girl in the tub. Like, gosh, don't do it. You know, don't take that census for the love of all things. Just trust God. Don't count all the people. You know what I mean? It's like over and over, you see David making some pretty bad mistakes. Mistakes with his family, who he promoted, who he didn't, how he dealt with sin in the camp. I mean, he really made some pretty big blunders. And yet, in the Psalms, it's crazy. The Psalms record so many of David's dumb moments because David would then turn to the Lord and write a song about it. And so we've got these records of not just the event happening, but David's journal entries afterwards. And he would turn to God with such leaning into trust, wholehearted confidence in God's mercy. I know you love me. It's like, David, you really blew it. Why are you talking to God all bold and confident, because he loves me. Well, don't you think that, like, you probably need penalty box for a couple of weeks or months? Or, I mean, that last one, that's a 2-year penalty box for sure. Before you approach God and say, I know he loves me, he'll forgive me, he likes me, I'm his favorite. But David, that's a little bold. And David would do it every time. His repentance was genuine, though. I mean, he wasn't faking the repentance part. Mercy comes, and David would receive that mercy, and then he would sing of God's grace. He would sing of God's forgiveness, that incredible mercy. I mean, it is wild, the revelation that David had in our devotional lives. Mercy is an incredible fuel. So many of us, I mean, making mistakes daily, some bigger than others, but daily in need of that mercy and in need of a God with infinite capacity and infinite kindness. It's one thing to meet a rich billionaire who's stingy. It's another to find one that just can't say no. To find God as this God with infinite mercy, who's delighted to show mercy. He delights in mercy. These were revelations that David had in a very clear way, and they carried over into his devotional life. They carried over into his songwriting and the way he interacted with God and the way that he dealt with people, in the way that he dealt with his own sin, in the way that he dealt with people angry at him, judging him, causing problems for him. He knew that he served a God filled with mercy. That was a powerful revelation that was not universally understood in that day. David had clear revelation of God's mercy. It's powerful for our devotional life. Of his friendship. David saw God as one that he could interact with, that he could speak in confidence to. Tell him the secrets, the hurts, the aches of his heart, the kind of thing that you confide in only the closest of friends. God to David was not just this God in heaven on a throne far away. He was a near friend, an ally, one that he talked to about his problems. It's great, being married. And being married to a woman specifically, which is the only way to do it. Unless you're a woman, then be married to a man. Being married to a woman, I get this incredible opportunity to be her journal sometimes. She's thinking through things and processing things. And she's telling me these intimate details about how she's thinking and feeling and what she's wanting. And, oh, I wish this could happen. Or dreaming. And I get to be this sounding board. I get to hear all these intimate details. And it's really pretty sweet. David saw God as that intimate friend that he could trust with his most dark secrets, with his sin, with his just the openness of his heart and being bare before God. He trusted him as a friend. David saw God as a friend, not as a far off ruler. Imagine all the people in the nation of Israel and the way they saw their king. Awesome, mighty, you know, warrior. But not the kind of guy that everybody in the nation could go be best friends with and, you know, go shoot some arrows in the backyard. I mean, it's like the relationship between subjects and king has to look a little distant because you just can't be everybody's best friend. But it's different when God's the king, because God has this capacity to be in deep friendship and intimacy with every single person. And David knew it, and he took God to task on it again and again and again. He pressed into friendship with God. That's sweet stuff for our devotional life. This is incredible material, just looking to God as a friend. Also, his nearness in times of trouble. You know, more than likely, unless you're Mr. Perfect, which I've met you, so we don't have any of those in the room. More than likely, you've got problems in your life. And when those get ironed out, you'll have more problems. They'll just look different. They'll have this name instead of that name. Instead of finances, it's your neighbor. You know, instead of the situation with your family, it's you got fired. I mean, it's your just problems are just life. And when trouble came near to David, his response, at least from what we see in the word, seemed very consistent. His response was, I go to God. You know, our tendency so many times is to whine at each other. I don't like this. This thing's bad. I got this problem. It's like, I find talking to people and working through problems to be helpful, but it cannot take the place, nor can it be primary. the primary place that we go, and it actually plays into our devotional life, is who do we run to when we're in trouble? David ran to God, and he found God to be very near at all times, right in the middle of his trouble and his despair. The problems, ones that he caused, ones that were caused from without, people that were throwing rocks at him, difficulties that he had, you know, all the different struggles. David looked to God and found solace in his life in God, in relationship, in the peace of God, knowing that God was near to him right in the middle of the problems, in the trial and the struggle and the pain and the hurt and the deaths and the difficulties. David ran to God. And it's just a part of our devotional life to, I mean, no judgment here, just do a little self-assessment. When something bad happens, what is first that runs through your mind? Is it a long list of, oh, dang? Is it, I'm going to find someone who's nearby and gripe? Is that, I'm not going to find somebody nearby. I'm going to go to that special someone, my griping sounding board someone, and I'm going to go to them and give them a good earful. It's not their fault, but they're going to suffer with me in this thing. Or do we go to him first? The nearness of God to us when we're in trouble, it can be the most tender ally, can really fuel our devotional life. David had a handle on these things and maybe a dozen more in powerful ways, profound. In many ways, he had clarity about subjects no one in the Bible had ever had up to that point. And some of these subjects, no one surpassed even after it. He had great clarity. His devotional life with God was real because God was real to him. God was not a distant idea. God was his friend, his confidant. He was near. He was there with him. He was his provider. He was the one that promoted him to king. He was the one in charge of his rule and reign. Here's what I love about David. Even before he was king, David already had a deep devotional life in God. When David became king, it wasn't because David really wanted to be king. That kind of happened at gunpoint. It's always good when your best friend's the one holding the gun. God told David, you're going to be king. It wasn't something David aspired to. David just wanted to worship God. He just wanted to be this lover of God, friend to God, sing love songs to God kind of guy. He was content with his little, and yet the Lord looked upon him, as the Lord often does with those with a devotional heart, and said, oh, no, I like you. I'm promoting you. And you're like, no, I don't want to be promoted. That means more responsibility. It's going to be harder to have a devotional life. I know I want to stretch you. I want you to reach even harder. And so he picks David and he makes him king. But do you know long before David was king, long before, he was a devout worshiper of God. We've got plenty of testimony, but Psalm 132 gives you a pretty good picture of David growing up with this heart of devotion, this ardent desire, this great love for God. He had a devout, worshiping life with God. He had a real relationship. It was very devotional. Second point, it's clear that before David became king, he was a skilled musician. You guys know the passage about Saul having a demon, and he said, go find somebody who's skillful at the harp and bring him in so that when that person plays on the harp, the demon will leave Saul alone. Well, David's like, 17, 18, 19. I mean, he's a young dude at this point. And it was said that he was brought in and he was so skillful, they couldn't find anybody else like him. David was skillful at the harp. This was a worship instrument in that day. It would be likened to today's guitar. All right, so David is a skilled guitarist at 17 or whatever teen, okay, years old. He was also a gifted songwriter. Many of the Psalms were written long before David was king. So he's a songwriter, worshiper, musician, devotional guy before he's ever king. So I want you to picture King David long before he's king. Picture him at 20, 25 years old. A heart of devotion, growing in the knowledge of God, singing out on the hillside of Bethlehem as he's watching over the sheep. Pretty boring job. He gets himself a guitar and he's singing songs to God. He's writing songs. He's pouring out his love. He's going as deep as he knows how. He's thanking God for his creation. This was David's life in God before he became king. Before there was ever a King David, there was a David with a deep devotional life with God. Now, what I like to do is I like to study the progression of stuff, at least when it's good stuff, you know? I think about, you guys have heard me talk about those Pazookies before. Those things are so good. The progression of the Pazookie, though, okay? First, you've got pizza. Pretty good. Then you've got cookie. Pretty good. Then you've got pizza, cookie, Pazookie. Pretty darn good. Oh, but they don't just make one flavor. They make that one flavor, and then they make it better. They make another one. They go, let's try Oreo. And then snickerdoodle. I'm telling you, I'm going back. I don't know how I'm going back. Got to get that snickerdoodle. They're like, no, it's not good enough. Put a scoop of ice cream on it. Make it better and better and better. Where are we going to be in 15 years with the Pazookie thing? I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. They'll shoot it out of a potato gun, and you catch it in a field. Ow! It's being shot at you. I can't wait. The progression of sweet things is a sweet study. Pun intended, sweet things. The progression of things that are awesome, honorable, noble, I love to watch the progression. Can I tell you what this songbird, this guitarist, this friend of God, this devotional lover of Jehovah did when he was put in power? I mean, he wrote songs and learned his instrument and sang those love songs and had a deep devotional life and was going deep in a lot of different pieces of theology and the nature of God. He did that as a young man and then a dude on the run and just, you know, as he was going up the progression of events. Can I tell you what he did when they made him king? The first thing he did when he became king, the first thing he did, his first like major ordinance and royal decree, go get the Ark of the Covenant, and we're going to put it in my backyard, and we're going to put a tent over it, and then we're going to surround it with singers and musicians, and we're going to have a house of prayer in my backyard 24/7 where the glory of God is being visible, is being tangibly experienced, and we're going to do this thing. It's referred to as David's Tabernacle. This was the first thing he put in place or tried. He had a little bit of a hiccup the first time he tried. You guys know that story. But it was the first thing as soon as he became king, it was the first initiative he started on as king. And it took him a little bit to get it in play and to get it all working and get the kinks out and get it tweaked. But just think about this for a second. This is pretty bold, okay? This is David, who already had a devotional life. He already loves God. He's a friend of God. He's got good theology. He says, they put me in charge. It's my nation now. Do you know what we do in my nation? We do 24/7 prayer and worship, night and day. And I want it in my backyard because I don't want to have to walk too far. I want there to be a house of prayer in my backyard where I can go anytime I want to and encounter God. This is like the coolest, most selfish thing. This is bold because he didn't just set up the tent. It wasn't just go get the ark and put a little covering over it. He employed, by the end of this thing, thousands and thousands of human beings to run his house of prayer in his backyard. When David was in charge, he took devotional life to the next level. He said, I'm no longer satisfied to do this alone. I want to surround myself with other singers and musicians. We're going to write some serious love songs to God. Do you know who wrote the rest of the Psalms? The other guys that David employed in that tent. Asaph, Jeduthun, others. The sons of Korah. These were guys David made. He forced them. I'm king, I'm in charge. You made me in charge. That was a dumb decision. Because let me tell you what we're going to do on my watch. Night and day, prayer and worship. And we're going to do it in the tent in my backyard. This speaks a lot about David's ambitions, about his desires, about his longings, about his devotional life. When you put a devotional man in charge, he runs crazy and tries to enlist everybody to help him have a better, deeper devotional life. And so we see in Psalm 27:4, this wild statement that David wants to establish a routine in his life where every day of his life, one thing I've desired of the Lord, that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord, that I might dwell, the house of the Lord, it was the tent that he set up in his backyard. That's what he's referring to. That's what the house of the Lord was in that hour. And that's where David went every day. And that's what David put into place. And he says, that I may dwell in that house. So it's got to be close enough to me that I can dwell there. And there, all the days of my life, I want to behold the beauty of the Lord and inquire in his temple. It was actually a tent. There was no temple at the time. The temple was built by his son later on. This was David's desire. This is what happens when you put that devotional man in charge. It wasn't enough for him to just have his own personal devotional life. He wound up orchestrating the entire nation to fund this project, to get behind it, to have a significant part of the workforce and of the priesthood now reallocated their lives to help David have his little devotional tent. This is pretty intense. It was intense. Here's what David did, though. I think about this, and I kind of marvel. David, at this point, he is responsible for more than probably everybody, anybody in all of Israel, and even some of the other nations. He's the king of the nation. You've got a long list of to-dos if you're the king. Meetings you got to be in, decisions you got to make, you know, functions you got to show up for, and things you got to do. David is so stinking busy. And yet David wanted to encounter the Lord so much that he made the priority to go to the house of prayer every day. He said, I'm the king, but you want to know what I really want? I am so busy. But you want to know what I really want? I want to go behold God every day of my life until I'm a dead man. That's what I really want. And he's praying it and he's singing it to God in the tent. In front of the glory. David's declaring it. This man who knows something about a devotional life. He said, my job is not really what I'm about. God made me king. Seemed like a silly idea to me, but you can see what I did with it. God made me king, but my heart is to have a devotional life before God. That's my desire. David knew that he could do this. Because of what God, of his own choosing, had told Moses back in Exodus 25, verse 22. If we can get that Exodus verse up. David didn't just invent this idea. He gleaned this idea from an interaction that God himself had with Moses. And it was about a similar tent, the tent of meeting. Moses was told by God, set up this tent, and there I will meet with you. Set up this special tent. Set up this special room. Set this thing up and devote it to me. And there I will meet with you. And from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim, which are upon the ark of my testimony, there I will speak to you. Now there it is. It's both the behold and the inquire. It's there I will speak to you. I will give you leadership. When you inquire of me, I'll speak. I'll give you leadership and direction. There I will meet with you. I will encounter you in a devotional life. David knew he could get by with this because God himself said he wanted to do it. God said, I want to set up a special tent, a special room. It became the temple. So whether it's a tent or a room or a temple, it's all the same. If the heart behind it's there, set this room up that I might come and encounter you and speak to you and meet with you. I want to. God says, I want to. David says, I want to. David says, this one thing I want in my life, I want to be in that tent every day, beholding and inquiring. Now, before we go any further, I want to give you three applications today of this message. Because I want to start off by saying, this message, what I've already spoken and where I'm going, you can take as an invitation to apply literally. literally, fully, actually. But I also recognize that not everyone in David's day who loved God was able to apply this teaching, this message, literally. There was some distance issues. Those that loved God that were 100 miles away were in a little bit of a pickle because they could not go to that tent every day. It was tough. So what I want you to do is a couple of different takeaways we're going to look at. I'm going to give you three applications. I want you to pray and just ask the Lord what you're supposed to do with this message. Just look at this, and I would call all three of these takeaways real, true, and you can apply them. And so whichever one you're at today, you just talk to the Lord about it and let him determine it in your heart. But I want to tell you, this can absolutely be applied as literally as it's going to come across. So a literal application. Go to the prayer room in Pantego, Texas, every day for the rest of your life. That's a literal application. Literal but limited. Maybe your life doesn't look quite that way. You don't feel like the Lord's giving you the grace for that right now. Go to the prayer room more, as much as you're able. Symbolic. Still could be taken in an application. In a symbolic way, make sure that your daily quiet time before the Lord, your devotional life, is solid. Make sure that it's real and being fueled. And so now as I go through the rest of this, you take whichever one of those you feel like the Lord is speaking and leading in your heart, but I don't want to dismiss either the symbolic or the literal, because I think there's a place for both of those in the application of this message. I just know this. There's not too many places where it would be safe and right and expected that a literal application of this message could even be done. And so I just want to make it clear, like, our church is called to build that prayer room. So there's actually a literal place, a literal application of this message if you want it. And I'm just thinking about David, this man of deep devotion. And we're doing a study on returning to a devotional life. I'm looking at Mr. Devotional. What did he do? What was his life about? What did he long for, even in the busyness of his schedule? David didn't say, I long to write songs in my prayer closet every day. He was already doing that. He said, I long to go to a corporate expression of night and day prayer and worship, and I long to do it all the rest of my days. Well, let's look at this call to a one thing lifestyle. This is a beautiful life vision. This is not over the top or eccentric. This is beautiful. You know, when it's all said and done, and we stand before the Lord, our accomplishments are not really going to be too impressive to him. I hope to accomplish some cool stuff. I like cool stuff. I like accomplishing things. I hate it when I'm working on stuff and working and working and nothing ever moves forward. I don't like that at all. But at the end of this life, when I stand before the Lord, it's not like if I accomplish this, this, and this, the Lord's going to go, wow, good job. How'd you pull that off? But what the Lord is going to be impressed with, what I am going to be measured by, is the measure of my devotional life with him. And not measured by, like, mean angry. Measured by, like, oh, you were one that drew so close to me. While there was a veil. While you had not yet seen and still believed. While it was difficulty and you were in the age of faith. You drew near to me. You pressed in for deep heart of devotion. I love that. I've been watching you. My heart is delighted by your pursuit. There really will be a real assessment on that, not so much on our accomplishments. So looking at this verse, let's go back to the Psalm 27:4 verse. Let's just kind of keep it up on the screen while I look at this. I'm just going to break it down one phrase at a time, if that's okay. One thing. The aspiration of David's heart was that he would be permitted by God to have one focus in life. He's praying for help. God, there are so many things and traps and distractions and problems and issues. Help! Ah! One thing! I just want this one thing, help! And the Lord hears that and imparts grace. You know, if you pray, he listens. What do you pray for? David prayed, oh God, help me. Help you to be my one thing. His desire was that despite being the king of Israel, a husband, a father, and a slew of other titles and responsibilities, that in the midst of all of it, he would be permitted this one thing in his life. It's pretty awesome. This is the thing that Mary was applauded for. You know, the verse in Luke 10, 39 through 42, or that passage there. Luke 10, 39. Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what Jesus said, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made, and she asked, Lord, tell her to help me. And the Lord answered, you're worried and upset about many things, but one thing is needed. And Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her. This one thing to focus devotionally on the Lord. Jesus said, it's just the one thing that matters. David said, this one thing I want to do. It's the one thing. This focus, this devotional focus. Jesus said, it will not be taken from her. And it got recorded in the Bible. This encounter, this rebuke of, no, we're going to let the girl have her devotional life. She sat at the feet of Jesus every chance she got. Every time you see Mary, she's on her face in front of Jesus. Every time. Pretty powerful. Next part of this verse, we can bring back up the Psalm 27:4 if we can. Just kind of go back and forth between them if you don't mind, Micah, if that's possible. I don't really know how PowerPoint works, so. that which we seek. He says, this I've desired of you. That will I seek. This seeking, that will I seek. It's what he's after. It's what he's investing his time and his energy and his efforts into. It's what he sought this. He invested to see this happen. It wasn't just that he said, this one thing that I've desired, it's not just a desire, it's not just a prayer. He says, I'm going to do it. I am going to seek. I am going to order my life. I am going to organize things in my schedule and in my life. I'm going to seek this out. I am going to make this happen. This one thing I want from you, this one thing I'm going to seek out and make happen. Is David invested energy? He organized his schedule to see to it that he could get this thing that he was desiring. He was laboring. He was seeking. He was stretching himself to make sure that this could happen. Let's bring up the Psalm 63, 1 through 2. Psalm 63 says similarly, Psalm 63, 1 through 2. Oh God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. Now what this means is I'm going to get up early every day to have time with God. That's what this means. This isn't just neat talk like, it's cool to love God in the morning because the morning is cooler. Like this is the psalmist laying out the practicals. I'm going to get up early in the morning before all my responsibilities start, and I'm going to seek God. Early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you. So I've looked for you in the sanctuary. Here it is again. Going early in the morning to the sanctuary, to the house of prayer. I mean, when we say sanctuary, we've got a little bit of a jaded idea of what that means because every church has a sanctuary. But not every church has what was going on in the sanctuary that's being talked about in the Bible. When the sanctuary is spoken about in the Bible, it's talking about the environment where 24/7 prayer and worship was going forth for God, for his glory, worship and praise and adoration going forth. And says the psalmist says, I have looked for you in the sanctuary to see your power and to see your glory. It's about scheduling it. Next. We can bring up the Psalm 27:4 again. That I may dwell in the house of the Lord. Dwell. David longed to dwell in the house of God. He wanted the house of prayer to be the core reality that he lived out of. Where he went every day. Where he spent significant time. For us, this doesn't have to mean a daily sacred trust. It could mean daily 30 minutes. I mean, you can pick whatever you want to do. But David, in his heart, he said, I want to dwell there. You know, you don't dwell in places you visit infrequently. You dwell in places that you go to every day. Like, that's your house. It's like where you dwell. He's likening the house of prayer to his home residence. He says, I want to dwell there. I want it to be so much a part of my life that there's no separation. I go there every day. It's like my extended living room down the street. I want to dwell in the house of the Lord. I don't want to visit. I don't want the busyness of my kingship to take me away where I only go there on special occasions or on this or on that or once a week. I want to dwell in that house. I want it to be so real to my daily experience. I want to dwell in the house of the Lord. All the days of our life. Look at that. To do it all the days of my life, David said. He wanted to live this way for decades. He set himself, he's like, I've been doing this a while now. He says, I've been going to the house of prayer every day. I've been going in there. I've been encountering God. I've been doing it a while now. I now see the wisdom. God, give me the grace to do this all the rest of my life. I don't want to burn out 10 years from now or 20 or 40. I want to do this as a lifestyle till I'm a dead man. I want to do it all my days. And he's praying, God, give me grace. Give me the wisdom to not leave this place of wisdom, this place of the watchful, this place of the friendship of God. Help me not to leave it. I want to do it all my days. And I want to behold your beauty. What do you do when you go to the house of prayer? David said, I want to behold. I want to encounter your beauty. I want to meditate on your unfailing love. When I go to that place, I don't want to just show up and give a check mark, came today, check mark, came yesterday, check mark, came tomorrow. I want to go and I want to behold him. I want to set apart the time, and then I want to engage the man. I don't want to just walk into the room. I don't want to just go in and go out having just spent the time. I want to behold him. I want to gaze on his beauty. I want to think about him as the beautiful God. I want to encounter this man. I want to have increased measure of revelation. David, at age whatever, when he writes this, he's thinking, I want my heart to grow and grow and grow in the grace of God, in the knowledge of God, in friendship with God. I want to grow in my relationship, and I want to attach it to going to that room every day for the rest of my existence. But he's king. And as king, as a leader, he does have responsibilities. He's got a lot on his plate. And truth is, if he can't keep some of those big responsibilities in check, he'll lose his little devotional hut. You know, if you can't keep the bad guy armies from taking over the city of Jerusalem, you're going to lose your tent. So David's got some work that he has to do as a king. It's not like he gets off the hook and he just gets to go sit in this tent 24 hours a day and take naps in there and all that. He has a real life. He's got real responsibilities. He's still the king of the nation. He says, I want to go in there and I want to behold the beauty of the Lord and inquire of him. I want to ask him, how am I supposed to lead? Please help me be a good king. I want to inquire of him, what do you think about this family issue I've got going on right now? I need your help. I need your leadership. I need your instruction. I want to behold him. I want to have that devotion, but I got to get some business done too. I just want the Holy Spirit to be my business partner. I just want to lean into God for my revelation, for my leading, for my place of leadership, for my responsibilities, for the provision of those things and the solving of problems in a divine way. I want to trust God. I want to partner with him. I want to go to that room every day. And I want to talk to God about what's going on in my responsibilities that are under my care, in my leadership, in my nation. I want to go and I want to inquire. And I want to hear from heaven what he's thinking, what he's saying, what he's feeling. I want to give you just a couple of the benefits of doing this, and I'm going back to the literal, and again, there's plenty of benefits taking this from a symbolic standpoint and saying, keep your devotional life 7 days a week. But in this context, especially on the literal interpretation here, there is such a blessing that we have in our midst that it is totally impossible. There are so few places on the planet right now where you could even go 7 days a week to a house of prayer and gaze on the beauty of the Lord and inquire of him. There are so few places that even exists 7 days a week. There are so few. We have the coolest context because a few miles from here, there is a room that is open 18 hours a day with live worship where Jesus is being exalted. 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, Christmas, New Year, your birthday, my birthday. Every day, there is a room, and it's the same room. And you go and you inquire and you behold. And tomorrow you go and you inquire and you behold. And the next day you go and you inquire and behold. We have the most incredible opportunity because the context that we have connected to this church, it's unreal. We have the tabernacle of David in our backyard in a way that is unfathomable. It's impossible. It's awesome. It's powerful. And it is so rare in the earth right now. So rare. And it's down the street. I love it. A benefit. There's a protection from distance. The protection of going to that room every day and saying, God, I'm here. I'm going to call out to you. It's a protection from a distance in your walk with God. How many of you don't have to raise your hands, just think about it, that you've gone days or weeks or even longer in your walk before, maybe this week, maybe it was last year, but that there have been times where you've gone days or weeks without a meaningful encounter and pressing into God. You'll do it a lot more if you plan to go to a building that the entire purpose of that building is to press into God. You will have meaningful encounters. You'll have meaningful touch points. You'll have the reach. You can't help how much God gives back, but you absolutely can control your reach. And I know that there have been times in the lives of many, many believers that they went days, weeks. I mean, the idea of waiting to go to a church service and waiting a whole week before you do that again, before you try to reach or engage, like no wonder we all feel icky. Like the Lord's desire is that we would have that daily bread, that we would be in his presence daily. It's a protection from distance in our hearts. It's a daily opportunity to behold and inquire. Just let's say, for the sake of argument, you decide, okay, I'm doing it. I'm going to the house of prayer every day until I'm dead. Just so you know, I pray that. Oh, God, give me the grace. Help me. Can I just tell you this? The kindest thing that the Lord has ever done for me, the kindest thing, was commission me to start a daily prayer meeting and to do it until he comes back. It was the kindest thing he's ever done after salvation. It's the kindest thing. It was in that context that I saw my wife. It's in that context I'm raising my kids. It's in that context that I've got sweet friendships and relationships. It's in that context that I get to go and inquire of the Lord daily. God, what are you doing in this ministry? What are you doing in my family? It is the kindest thing he's ever done for me, was to call me to what I want to present to you as an invitation tonight for you, to daily go and inquire and behold. Because here's one thing I know, no matter how bad today is, no matter what happens, I'm less than 24 hours away from going back to that room and calling out on God. I am always less than 24 hours away from going back to that room and calling out on God. 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It's brilliant strategy for our devotional life and for our leading. Experience his kindness. Just say this as we exit. If you want to, like David, you can make his house your house. David said, I want to dwell there like it's my house. It wasn't his house. It was down the street. It was a tent. He said, I want to make it my house. You can make the prayer room your house. You can make it the place where you dwell, the place where you find your fuel and your fire and your strength and your grace. And I want to tell you this, is this is going to sound so weak, and I'm sorry, but it's true. It's so true. As a pastor, as a leader in your life, the greatest gift that I can give to you is that prayer room down the street. I love to teach the Bible. That prayer room will do way more for you than my Bible teaching. I love the fact that we've got small groups. That prayer room will actually encounter your heart even more than being in a small group. This daily coming to the Lord, it has been my life focus for the last 11 years to build that prayer room for him and for you, that you would have a place you could go 7 days a week if you wanted to. The greatest gift I can give you as a leader, it's not my teaching or what, I mean, all that stuff's pretty weak. And while the prayer room may not be as strong as we'd like it to be, it's real and it's not going anywhere. And it's actually, as a leader, I don't have a lot I can give you. The greatest gift I can give you is that building down the street that exists 7 days a week that you can go and behold and encounter him. But it's not going to be easy to add this into your life. It's going to take planning, reprioritizing. A new year's coming up. If you want to take this for real, if you want to take this one thing, and really David's context was go to the house of prayer. So it wasn't, in David's context, it wasn't devotional life at home in his prayer closet. He was already doing that. This was his upgrade. This was the next level. This was what happens when you give a devotional man the helm of the boat. This is where he takes it. But if you want to take it the way that David took it, it's going to require planning, reprioritizing. It's not going to be easy, but it will be worth it. The kindest thing he ever did, he said, start a daily prayer meeting tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. and don't stop until I come back. And so for 11 years, every morning, unless I'm sick or out of town, I get up, early will I seek you, and I go to that prayer room. And some mornings, I'm so dull. But every morning, I try to reach at least a little bit. And I'll tell you what, I'm so glad. I'm so grateful for that in my life, a room to inquire and to behold him 7 days a week.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.